Good afternoon to you. This is a Juno afternoon on a rainy, rainy afternoon here in Juneau, Alaska, with a 100% chance of showers happening for the rest of this afternoon and tonight. And overall rain, lots of inches of rain coming down. We'll update you on the weather as we get further into the show today. We're going to be talking about the upcoming Modest Yahoo concert today. Also, the Summer Fun Series will wrap up with Above and Beyond Alaska, folks. We'll be talking about the Drive Electric Week. We're going to be hearing about the Community Marimba Workshop. And also, we're going to learn about the Rotary Youth Exchange Program with our guest, Virginia Stonkus. That's all coming up, plus Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, lots more coming up here on Juneau Afternoon. But first, here's National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. In Yuma, Arizona, a tribe has partnered with a private group to try something different to address Alzheimer's disease, a self-contained dementia village. Maya Springhawk-Robnett of the Arizona Science Desk reports.
The Kokopa Tribe and Medical Management Group, a private development firm, recently devised an idea to turn a 199,000-square-foot abandoned building into a 4-acre indoor Alzheimer's village. The Veterans Neurological Research Center's design is modeled after the 1950s to remind the elderly patients of their youth. Caregivers would be disguised as postal workers, grocers, and other vintage village-goers. The Kokopa tribe acquired the property in 2008 for about $9 million, but the real estate crash soon followed. In turn, MMG purchased the property for about half what the tribe paid for it. Kokopa tribal council member J. Deal Begay says the 1,800 tribal members may still see a return on their original investment. A deal with MMG gives them 30% of the revenue on the project, but also 30% of the risk.
This could help our people in the long run. We thought about the future of employment, and not only our tribe, we knew that this would help the whole area.
The Research and Memory Care Center would employ more than 400 people, many from the tribe and around Yuma County. The tribe and MMG plan to get the $50 million needed for the project through municipal bond financing and low-income housing tax credits. Completion is slated for 2018. For National Native News, I'm Maya Springhawk-Robnett.
As supporters and opponents of the Dakota Access Pipeline Project wait for a court decision, people supporting the Standing Rock Sioux Tribe have held demonstrations in cities across the country in recent weeks. On Thursday in Albuquerque, New Mexico, people marched on campus at the University of New Mexico, then stood on a street corner with signs voicing their concerns.
Have you heard anything from Hillary Clinton? Have you heard anything from Donald Trump? Have you heard anything from Barack Obama? And that is one question they need to answer.
What makes us indigenous is our connection to the land. And these entities serve to demolish the land, to obliterate the land, to poison it.
Water is life!
I'm Terry Flowerday. I live here in Albuquerque now, but I'm originally from South Dakota.
It's an issue that we're all facing. There's water issues here all the time in New Mexico, and particularly with the oil pipelines up north, have just gotten completely out of control. My sign is in the Lakota language. It says Miniwichoni, and that means basically water is life.
Defending Native American rights, to me, Indian rights are human rights. They've already bulldozed ceremonial land, and that really upsets me. Michael Collins, I'm just a white Santa Fean. Who cares?
Shandell Lebeau. I am from Newtown, North Dakota. They already have all those oil rigs planted all over in Newtown, and you can see them burning at night. You know, there comes like the drugs and the human trafficking and people missing. It's not a good thing for generations.
My name is Adam Parker. Well, I live here in Albuquerque, New Mexico, originally from the Nanzad, Lower Fruitland area. And what I do is I'm a graphic designer, screen printer, so I'm offering my services next week to go up there and do designs, posters, shirts, you know, fundraiser for free. The shirt that we have, it has the seal of the Sioux tribe. It has a native guy on there, you know, kind of looks like he's yelling, hashtag no DAPL.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. For 45 years, NARF has stood firm for justice in Indian country on critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior. Stand firm with NARF. Learn more at NARF.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Walk the tightrope for goodness and hold on for so long till the wind blows. Try to knock my socks off. Quick kick, dojo. Razor sharp like a shark.
That's music from Modest Yahoo, who's going to be performing here on the 23rd, and Cheryl Snyder from KTOO is here with me. Cheryl, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, hi Andy, thanks for having me
to
talk about Modest Yahoo.
It's really exciting.
It is, it's happening. 2 weeks out from the show. Andy, we are like well on our way to being sold out. We had a total of 800 tickets to sell. There are a mere 114 left. So come on, folks, if you're hoping to go, make sure you don't miss out. Get your tickets.
So the folks that haven't heard, we'll just talk a little bit about it. We can talk about how people can get tickets in a minute, too, but for people who don't know, when I was doing KXLL, Modest Yahoo was one of those kind of first, it was first couple of years that I was doing KXLL, and that was when he was like very much Orthodox Jewish, had the curls and had the sort of, dress that people would expect out of that.
Hasidic,
and it was a Hasidic Jewish kind of garb. And that was kind of, obviously when you hear this music, and that's just kind of a non sequitur in a way, right? So it made it very interesting. And he was really, his lyrics were really about those themes. But he's kind of opened up in the past few years, right?
So about 2 years ago, he dropped being an Hasidic Jew. He's still really Jewish, and that's still part of his identity, but he's more of a secular Jew. But I think Jewish themes, really kind of universal themes of spirituality, are very much infused in his music, and some Old Testament. You hear a lot of biblical names being referenced. He's got his song Jerusalem, and if you listen to it, it's there, but it's really he's got millions of fans all around the world. It's really, his music is really universal, even though for him it's kind of based in this Jewish spirituality.
It's become a little more non-secular,
he's like super secular now. Seeing him, if you saw him walk down the street, would never know
what
he's
a pop star.
Of a shaggy pop star now.
He's
got some long hair happening these last few days.
He expanded, and as you can hear, he's got that reggae influence, which was always very interesting. And then he's kind of rapping over that. But he's gotten a lot more into some other elements of his work recently as well, right?
Yeah, well, he's been doing a ton of collaborations with different artists. So that last song, Tornado, I just love it. I can't get enough of that. And that was a collaboration he did with the Polish ambassador, who I never knew of until the song, but he's also totally awesome. And they just released that this spring. Some of his stuff, he's got another track, which I'm going to totally forget the name right now. I'll think of it in a minute. But he released that also this spring. And it's a little bit more clubby and kind of anthemy, slightly different sound, a little bit more commercial than some of his other stuff. But he just dropped a song a couple weeks ago. The video is dropping today. I'm going to post it in a little while. But it's called Love Born. And this really kind of goes back to his roots of reggae and rapping.
Such a great flow, doesn't he?
It's totally
a smooth, cool flow, but with a little bit of an edge to it. It's always had that urgency to the way he kind of phrases his lyrics. It's awesome.
Yeah, and he's really thoughtful with his lyrics. His, you know, some artists, they sing and they got a melody, but they're not really saying a whole heck of a lot. I think part of the reason why people really gravitate to him, his fans really love him, because he's actually saying something.
Yeah, yeah, it's really all there. And I just think, too, there's such a great kind of that general vibe of the reggae ska kind of stuff, but that deep house kind of beat that's happening too, that stuff. It's really, it just immediately makes you kind of go, yeah, all right, you know, it kind of gets you rolling along. So that's really cool. Obviously, that's an amazing thing. That's the concert that's happening on the 23rd. That's Friday, not this, two Fridays
yeah,
from now, right?
And I just want to emphasize that he's actually doing an acoustic show for us. So what we're hearing is, you know, full production, multi-instruments in a studio. But his show with us is going to be him with a guitar accompaniment. And I've posted some on our social media pages, some clips, YouTube clips of him doing shows like that. And he is so engaging. He actually has a really beautiful voice, which you can't quite hear in Love Born, but he can really sing. And when he does a live show, he just puts his heart and soul into it. The last clip we're going to go out on, Andy, in a few minutes, I pulled a bit of his song One Day that he was doing with the exact configuration that he's going to be here with us. It's him and his guitar accompaniment, and he does some really killer beatboxing, which maybe
cool.
We can talk about some beatboxing.
Yeah,
so the other thing about Modest is that he is this incredible beatboxer, and I requested a while back and finally got a yes to him doing a beatboxing workshop as a benefit for the stations. That's going to happen on Thursday, September 22nd. We are just kind of working out
just
how that's going to work.
Yeah,
I told him he could figure out how many people could come and kind of time parameters on Thursday afternoon.
And you're working with who to set this up?
I love this. Bob Miller, who is Modest's dad. I get to work with his dad. I've been emailing back and forth.
The family affair. It's awesome.
Isn't it great? His dad's coming up here on tour with
him. That's really cool. Like pop star, yeah. You know, he's got his whole thing going. He's like, oh, yeah, talk to my dad.
But he's also like my age. He's like 40.
Yeah,
and so his dad's is, you know, probably in his 60s.
Right.
No, it's totally great. So, stay tuned. We'll have some announcements on the air. We'll make use of Facebook to just let you know about getting in on the beatboxing workshop. I'm assuming we'll do it as a lottery for members.
Okay.
But I'll work that out with Modest over the next few days.
So the big thing, though, folks, is this thing's going to sell out. This concert's going to sell out on the 23rd. It's already it's Centennial Hall, 800 tickets, right? And now we're down to 100 left, and we're still 2 weeks out. So So how do people get them? I mean, I'm sure you're going to get a rush of tickets right now. So how do people get them?
So all sales are going to the Jack. They are the presenting organization. We are co-presenting with them, but they are carrying the weight of bringing him here. So you can go to their website under, I think it's under box office, the top tab. Also,
JAHC.org.
Yep, JAHC.org. Right. It's easier on our homepage, on our website. You'll see on the right-hand side at KTOO.org, there's a link just click on
I'm
the
sure
Modest
you've
Yahoo.
Made it very obvious
very
for people.
Very obvious. Get your tickets.
On all station websites.
Exactly.
Right.
Big banners on KRNN and KXLL. We want to make it easy for you to
really
make sure you go.
Awesome. I remember talking to you maybe almost a year ago about like the idea, and you were thinking about it, and but fretting. Obviously, Modest Yahoo isn't necessarily a household name, but he has this depth of there's people like me who know him from his early work that was really kind of out there, cool stuff. And then he's really kind of hit this big pop and really kind of, hit that kind of as well. And now he's doing this other really interesting stuff and beatboxing. He covers so many different kind of genres.
Well, it's been so interesting to me, the response here, because, like you said, there's a lot of people who knew him before but didn't realize that he has been actually producing a really amazing body of work this whole last decade. And he's never stopped performing. And he's done just for the last year and a half, he has been on a world tour. It's in celebration of his Live at Stubbs, which is the big album that we really promoted on KXLL.
Right.
And that has just like brought this huge upsurge in attention towards him and followers and people loving him. And in Juneau, I'm finding some people only know like King Without a Crown or his song One Day, which King Without a Crown's amazing.
Yep.
One Day is like the more popular side of his stuff, and that's not really he's not his latest stuff isn't so poppy. Mm-hmm. He's kind of going back to some of what
yeah.
he started.
He's always
with.
Maintained that quality no matter yes. what kind of genre he's in. It's always like really interesting, cool stuff no matter what he's doing. So anyway, yeah. it's going to be awesome. It's happening on the 23rd. It's going to be at Centennial Hall, and it's going to sell out, folks. So go to jahc.org or kto.org, and you can get the tickets. And then stay
beatboxing.
Tuned to find out more about the Beatbox Workshop. Let's listen. We'll go out on that here, Cheryl. Here's this little bit of a sample. What is a sample
yeah.
of?
Yeah, so this was, again, this is the exact configuration that he's going to be doing here with us. It's him and his favorite guitarist. And this clip starts, it's the song One Day, and it starts just as he's going into a big beatbox segment.
Very cool. Cheryl Snyder, thanks so much.
Thank
KTOO.
You.
And that's where you can go to get tickets, kto.org or jahc.org, to see the September 23rd, it's a concert of Modest Yahoo. It's going to be sweet. And here's a little example of his beatboxing.
One day.
That's cool stuff. That's Modest Yahoo doing some beatboxing, and he's going to be doing a beatbox workshop here on the 22nd, and stay tuned to KTO to hear more about that, and of course, the big concert happening on the 23rd. Well, got a couple of quick announcements. One is, of course, the torrential rain is still happening. It's moved into the area this morning, and it looks like they're predicting 1.5 inches up to another 3 inches expected throughout the rest of today. So lots of heavy rains. There are some advisories of watching for steep river rises throughout tonight. So keep on the lookout for that. There's also, we got to notice that there's also a traffic hazard on Egan Drive near the Park Shore Condo. So as you're driving around that corner there by the Park Shore Condos, just watch. There's a hole in the in Egan Drive there where folks are saying to be cautious and use a little extra caution and slow down. All right, coming into the studio right now for me is Aaron Vanier from Above and Beyond Alaska. Aaron, thanks so much for coming in, man.
Thanks for having
me. Yeah.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's going on? We got the end of summer wrapping up here. So what does it look like at Above and Beyond Alaska right now? What's going on there?
Well, every year we've been doing an annual kayak and gear sale, and this year we'll have a single new kayaks for sale, which will be great. We'll actually have some nice new fiberglass boats for sale.
Oh, cool.
We have two of those. We actually have a single plastic boat.
Like a Necky kind of thing?
We
or
actually
something?
Have
yeah.
Necky fiberglass
okay.
boats
yeah.
For sale this
cool.
year, and then a Wilderness System single. And then the rest of the boats will be used boats. So we'll have some used single kayaks and then used double kayaks as well. And in the used double kayaks, we have plastic and a few fiberglass boats as well.
Is there a set price on those things kind of going into it, or do people just come in and bank a bid, or is it how does that go?
We'll have set pricing on it. The plastic doubles run right around $600 all the way to $1,500 for the nicer fiberglass boats. And then on the new kayaks, they range about $1,500 to, I think, the fiberglass boats we got on sale for about $2,400 right now.
Do you have any advice for folks, like, let's say they're either beginners or intermediate, or, you know, what boat might be better suited for them?
Most of the boats that we carry have great initial stability, and so they're really good for someone who has either very little and or potentially even no experience with some pointers and or a little bit of training. They can get in the boats we have and have a great time right away.
Yeah. I bought a double from you guys years ago as a Necky, a double Necky kayak. Still use it to this day. Actually, my friends borrow it more than I get to use it a lot, but That's still in good use.
Yeah, that happens sometimes. You know, a lot of times people will buy boats for, for guests. We get that a lot, too. Someone's got, had grandma was interested in buying a boat for the kiddos to use
That's
in
cool.
the summer
yeah.
and just wanted something available for them. So that we get that a bit, too. Yeah.
How about all the gear that goes with it?
Correct. So we'll have a lot of new gear, so paddles. We actually have Werner paddles this year for the first time. We're now a Werner paddle authorized dealer, and so we have a good selection of Werner paddles. So we have some nice fiberglass paddles, nice and light, and then all the way down to good price point paddles, kind of starting in the $100 range. All the new stuff will be 15% off, and then if you buy a kayak, all the new gear will discount further down to 20% off
okay.
retail, which would be great.
Great. And someone goes in, they've never had a kayak before, can they get all the stuff ready to go out and go on a trip? Walking out of the shop, basically?
Yes, for sure. So then we'll also have the life jackets, the spray skirts, the bilge pump paddle float, kind of the safety items, too, as well. And then there's some fun accessory-type stuff that we sell, too, as well. You know, even the whistles, the knives, all that type of stuff.
Dry bags, stuff like that,
too. We have some dry bags, too, this year. Brought in some new ones, a new vendor, and so hope to see how they sell this year, too. So
how does it go, you guys? Part of the used thing is you kind of have a replacing the fleet kind of, I would think, kind of refresh of the fleet every year, right? What percentage of the fleet, or I don't know, maybe not percentage, but how many of those do you replace?
Like in a life jacket or something?
I'm thinking more of the kayaks, maybe the life jackets too.
Good question on the kayaks. I mean, we tend to try to turn over anywhere from 10 to 15 kayaks, kind of depending on the year.
What's your whole fleet?
Oh, that's a good question.
Yeah.
We picked up some boats last year as well, so we kind of added some boats this year. So we have more boats this year than we've had in the past. So I guess probably ballpark maybe 50 to 60 boats total.
Yeah. Right.
With everything counted up.
Sure, yeah. Where do you keep them? Are they all in Auk Bay, or do you keep them stashed out the road for some rental stuff, or how does...
That's a great question. We have them out at now the Eagle Valley Center for rent, and that's nice this year because then people don't need to transport them from Auk Bay. Also, the wildlife viewing out at Amalga Harbor and those areas tend to be a little better.
That's awesome, yeah.
And then another place that we rent kayaks from, which not a lot of people know about, is Windfall Harbor. So if someone's going over to Pat Creek to do bear viewing or they want to camp over in Seymour Canal, they can fly out with Wings or somebody and then just rent a kayak out there from us as well.
That's cool. That's really such a cool option, right? Because that is one thing you used to... I remember I just used to, before I owned a kayak, we'd rent. And you did have to figure out all the car stuff, too, you know, on top of it. Which sometimes is great, because sometimes you really want to go someplace really, you know, very specific or whatever. But a lot of times it would be just, can I just go and put this thing in the water, you know, somewhere out the road.
Yeah, make it easy. I mean, one other nice thing, too, is that we do offer water taxi service in the summer. So if someone wants to go to the Burners Bay cabin or any of the cabins on... Shelter Island or something like that, we offer that. Or even to Oliver's Inlet, for example, if they're going to go over to the Seymour Canal Cabin. And that's been something that's growing over the years, too, people really utilizing that service to try to go further away.
So does that mean you go to Auk Bay, you rent the stuff there, and you guys put the stuff on the boat, and then you take the people out to wherever, to like Echo Cove or something? Or?
That's a good question. I mean, all the kayak gear for those type of rentals then originates at Auk Bay, so all the paperwork payment can happen there, all the safety debriefing. And then from there, we can either potentially go right from Auk Bay, which is probably the most convenient, but then quite often the boats out at Amalga doing day trips, guided day trips, kind of in the Amalga Lincoln Island area. So sometimes those trips originate from Amalga Harbor as well,
okay.
and then we get people where they need to go.
It's cool. You know, I kind of had never quite thought about that, but like I've been talking to friends about, boy, we got to get out to Burners Bay Cabin. It's such a cool cabin. But, you know, the logistics seemed like, how do we do it? But it's like, we'll just call you guys and we'll be set up, right?
Yeah, you could rent the kayaks, and then probably the easiest thing would probably be then meet the boat at Amalga. And then from there, zip over to Burners Bay, get dropped off and either kayak back or come and get a pickup again to get the way back. So easy. Lots of options.
Wow, so good. Yeah, that's cool. Well, and then what else is going on? You guys, what's the end of your season kind of officially? When do you guys call it the end? Or
for kayak rentals, it will be the 23rd. We do have some, I think UAS is doing a larger rental at the very end of the year, so we'll do one for them. But then that kind of wraps up for us at the end of September, basically, mm-hmm. the 23rd, mm-hmm. and then a few kind of special rentals after that.
And what's the day of the sale?
It is this weekend, so it'll be 10 to 4 this Saturday and Sunday.
Okay. Oh, both. Okay, that's great. But that's what a great opportunity to get either a discounted brand new boat or to get one. For me, it was so perfect to get one that had already been in the rental fleet. Had a few dings on it, big deal, you know.
Yeah,
you knew it was seaworthy, right, because it had been used in rentals.
One thing I wanted to mention, too, is this time we'll be off 2767 Sherwood Lane, kind of right across the street from the DMV, and we'll have an inside area. So if we still have a little bit of this rain on Saturday, we'll have an indoor area, which will be nice this year.
Okay, that's great to know. It's not at your Auk Bay location. It's out kind of in that right past Industrial Boulevard kind of area, Sherwood Lane.
Yeah, Sherwood Lane, okay. Right across the street from the DMV.
Okay, great. Okay, cool. Well, Aaron, thanks so much. It's just the Above and Beyond Alaska end-of-season kayak sale, plus it's all the end-of-season stuff, and it's just cool to hear the different services you guys are doing as well, and I guess Above and Beyond that starts ramping up to start taking snowboarders up to the mountains, right? I mean, that kind of stuff, right? So very cool. Aaron, thanks so much for coming in. Once again, the kayak sales happen out in Sherwood Lane out near the DMV, and it's Above and Beyond Alaska, selling some cool used and new, brand new gear, which includes kayaks, doubles, and fiberglass, and plastic, and that whole deal. Great. Thanks, Aaron.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Let's hear a little bit more of this Matsuyahu.
Perseverance Theatre. I have found Peter Pan, a girl, mollusks, and mermaids. We must make way.
Haste, sir.
Right away, Smee. Peter and the Starcatcher plays only through September 18th.
Tickets, sir. We'll need tickets.
Well, get your tickets by calling 463-TIXS. Visit the Jack or ptalaska.org.
Oh, I always play that when we talk electric cars, man. All right, we got electric drive week, or drive electric week, right? Sorry, I switched the I switched the terms a little bit there, guys. But Duff Mitchell and Devin Kibbe are here to talk about the Drive Electric Week. Thanks so much for coming in, you guys. You don't have to wear those headphones, Duff. Sorry, man.
All right, man.
I know. They'll choke you.
They'll choke me. Complicated, you know. Penguins News.
That's right. That's right. But welcome, you guys, and thanks so much for coming in. Tell me a little bit about the idea behind Drive Electric Week.
Well, National Drive Electric Week started out in 2011 with like 16 cities across America. Now it's like there's hundreds of thousands of vehicles participating all across America. There's 225 cities for 2016. Juno's been doing it for the last 3 years, and we've grown from basically one car or two cars involved to like 23 last year.
And what is the stats on the number? I was just talking to a friend the other day about the stats of the number of electric vehicles operating in Juneau, because just a few years ago it was like a dozen.
Right.
And now it's like, what, 80?
Well, last year we think there was about 40.
Okay.
Devin keeps a pretty good record. Now we're way over 80.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. It's amazing. Yeah.
And the statistics are there's 155 electric vehicles in 2015 in Alaska. So Juneau is more than half of all the vehicles, electric vehicles in Alaska, which is cool. We're on hydropower. It makes sense.
It makes total sense. And it makes sense on not just because of the hydropower, but also because of the way kind of the city's laid out, right?
Right. The short road system and the short battery life, of course.
Yeah, right.
Makes it ideal because it's not short here.
Yeah, exactly. So tell me a little bit about some of the stuff that's been happening. What are some of the big developments that have happened in electric vehicles that you think are really – is the reason why more and more of them are starting to – kind of the snowball is starting to happen with them.
Well Juneau has doesn't require a 200-mile electric vehicle. They're nice, but you don't need them.
Right.
You know, you can go to Fred Meyer's, go to work, whatever, on 80 miles.
The Leaf, for instance, has like an 80-ish kind of mile.
Yeah, the Ford has like 75, 80. They're in that they're in that sweet range of 75, 80. You know, and what we have is a lot of people in Juneau are buying used Leafs. You know, somebody in Seattle or San Francisco, they want the 107, they want the 120, they want the 200. So now you have a vehicle with 20, 25,000 miles on it. Juneau folks are snapping them up.
Right.
They're for a song.
Yeah.
And, you know, 85 miles is great.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, so what's the day itself look like as far as what's going to happen, the gathering here? No? Who wants to talk?
Well, I'll talk with Devin.
Okay.
From 12 to 4 at Sandy Beach, we're going to be serving hot dogs and refreshments and coffee from like 12 to 1, 1:30. We're going to have a grand photo. Last year we had 23 people.
Okay,
23
cool.
vehicles, and a couple showed up late. So it's like we really had like 25, 27. So we're doing the photo between 1 and 1:30. And then after that, there's a lot of electric vehicle owners that will sit around and help people get some test drives, talk to them, and you know, allow people to sit in their vehicle and make sure the heater works,
the
good stuff that people have questions. There is quite a number of people that have called and said, hey, I'm interested in electric vehicle. This, can I come and, you know, kick tires and whatnot? This is what it's for.
And right now it seems to be sort of on the consumer end, but are there commercial kind of things coming on online that would be applicable in Juneau as well?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, Andy. We have the first electric bus in Juneau, Bob Chains,
Gastonaw
Guiding. Has the first electric bus. So there's one commercial development. You know, there's a lot of truck manufacturers and service, like for utilities and whatnot, that are moving into the electric space. Smith Motors has delivery vehicles. Juneau's perfect for that. So we see the electrification transformation for not only delivery, but also for Capital City Transit. 18% of all the buses that are selling now to communities are electric.
Hmm.
And it isn't just because they're greenhouse gas reducers. It's because they save the ratepayers and the taxpayers money.
Yeah.
The life cycle costs are just phenomenally better value than a diesel bus. So
it's getting back to the old streetcar model hooked up to electricity. And, you know, I mean, really, it's sort of that same thing that was public transport for decades and decades in urban areas in America.
Right.
Yeah, and still are in places like San Francisco and stuff like that. There's still those things running all over the place. Yeah.
So Devin, why don't you tell them about some of the events about the timeline and push pins for the new EV charge?
Well, first of all, we have hot dogs.
Oh, well, yeah. I can't believe we waited until now. We buried the lead. There's hot dogs.
There you go.
We also have a push pin map that's been put together, and everyone who shows up can get a pin and put where they would like to see a charging station.
Oh, that's a really cool idea, yeah, because and also it'll make people obviously aware of where charging stations are now as well, yeah.
And we'll have a map with the charging stations. There's 10 in Juneau, and so people can come back, come and pick one up if they're looking at, you know, where are these?
Yeah. So, you know, Jeff just walked in and handed me a note. We have a listener. This is a fun thing. It doesn't often happen on June afternoon, but a listener just called in with a question. They wanted to field it from you. How do electric cars do on hills and or with studded tires?
Well, they're really heavy. And I live on a hill.
Uh-huh.
And so when I bought mine, I left it with the highway tires that give you the high mileage, you know, because they're trying to get you high mileage, right? And I live on Pioneer Avenue, so I have to go up Cordova. And once I put Blizzaks on there, not a problem. And that's not studs.
Yeah, right. That's just a winter tire without studs.
And what
studs,
you
yeah.
find is I've never fishtailed. I've driven it for – I've had it for 3 years. So was that three winters? I've never fishtailed. The thing is heavy, so it goes up a hill, and if you don't have the studs or you don't have the Blizzaks, you just sink. You don't fishtail and go whatever, and then you just – it's so heavy you go in reverse and you back out and you're not stuck.
Okay.
And also, you know, people should go up to Eagle Crest. They have noticed this. There's a waiting line for the chargers at Eagle Crest, so they're getting up there.
Yeah, they're getting up there. Okay, well, there's your answer. All
yeah,
right.
Well, we run studded tires on ours, and it really destroys the serenity of the vehicle, but
right.
it does really stick to the ground.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
They're very quiet.
Low center of gravity. Yeah, yeah, that's right. They're very, very quiet. So, okay, more on the event. We have the stick pin map. That's very cool.
The timeline, what we're going to have. The... Go ahead, the...
Dust put most of this together. So.
Oh, okay.
Right. we're gonna have a timeline of when you can guess when Juno has 500 EVs. We've gone from like 0 to 80 in 3 years, or 0 to 80 in 4 years, whatever it is.
Yeah.
But now we're guessing when is Juno? You know, you go up there and pick on the timeline where you think Juno's going to hit 500 electric vehicles.
Do we have an idea of how many vehicles total, all vehicles there are in Juno?
You know, and Americans are like almost one vehicle per person,
yeah.
because you know, there's two vehicles. So there's about 27 to 30,000 vehicles run around Juneau.
Yeah, yeah, I can imagine. Wow.
Yeah, so we're making inroads.
Well, cool. So when does this all start?
12 o'clock, grand photo at 1:30, hot dogs, coffee, refreshments. In the afternoon, people can come and kick tires and get some EV rides and see if they'd like to... You know, ask questions about the
electric
cool.
vehicles. That's cool. I want to be there. It'll be really fun. Bring your kids, right?
Bring your
yeah,
kids.
Yeah, all that.
Yeah, have your kids guess when the push pin's going to be, you know? And
cool.
And we'll have a bunch of EV literature as well for people thinking about buying them from Department of Energy and also some local things. And we also, Devin's the president of the Electric Vehicle Club, so we'll be asking people that, you know, if you'd like to join the Juno chapter of the Electric Vehicle Association.
And are there do-it-yourselfers out there?
Absolutely.
How many of those are in town?
Two of them have registered.
Okay.
So they're not a whole lot out there, but I'll tell you what, there's a PT Cruiser out there that if you look at it from the outside, you would never know it's
really?
Electric. Yeah, Ed Myers has done just a fantastic
cool.
job on his gray PT Cruiser. It'll be out there. People go, hey, why is this thing parked with all the EVs? Well, it's an EV in disguise.
That's really cool, yeah. Well, it's awesome. Okay, thanks so much for coming in, you guys. Again, it's the Drive Electric Week, and Sandy Beach is where this is
Sandy
all
Beach.
Happening, right? And starts at 12 o'clock
one.
On Saturday.
Saturday.
Tomorrow.
Yep.
Yep, and... Yeah, bring the folks, bring everyone around, and get to, if you've never been inside an electric vehicle, now's your chance to do it. And
we know at least one Tesla, maybe two will be there.
Ah, the Tesla. Oh, very good. The Teslas will be there. I like the Teslas.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah, very cool. All right, thanks so much, you guys, and have a great event. That's going to be the Drive Electric Week happening at Sandy Beach starting at noon. Right now, here is Garrison Keillor with Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 9th of September, 2016. It's the birthday of Leo Tolstoy, born 1828 in the village of Tula, about 120 miles south of Moscow, to a wealthy family. His parents died while he was still young. He was raised by relatives, went off to university, learned several languages, failed to finish. One instructor said he was both unable and unwilling to learn. spent several years writing in a diary, drinking, gambling, racking up debts, going to brothels, then fell in love with a young woman, Sofia Andreevna. She was 18, he was 34. He presented her with his diaries a week before their marriage. She was horrified. Nonetheless, she married him. She bore him 13 children. It took him 6 years to write War and Peace, which came out in 1869. Sophia helped him. She rewrote each draft. The book, 1,400 pages long, one of the longest books ever written. She kept her diary. He kept his. In his diary, he wrote, "I feel that she is depressed, but I'm more depressed still, and I can't say anything to her. There's nothing to say. I'm just cold, and I clutch at any work with ardor." She wrote in her diary, "I am afraid to talk to him or look at him. I am sure he must suddenly have realized just how vile and pathetic I am." He left her after 48 years of marriage, escaped with their youngest daughter on a train, died a week later at the station master's home, Sophia at the door begging to be let in. He was the author also of Anna Karenina, which begins, "Happy families are all alike. Every unhappy family is unhappy in its own way." It's the birthday of Otis Redding, born in Dawson, Georgia, 1941, wrote his big hit, "Sittin' on the Dock of the Bay," and recorded it just 3 days before he died in a plane crash outside Madison, Wisconsin. He was 26. And it's the birthday of the novelist and psychotherapist Paul Goodman, New York City, 1911, famous for his book Growing Up Absurd, came out in 1960, a book about the dehumanizing force of public education. Growing Up Absurd, which became a sort of Bible for the counterculture movement, and also was a bestseller, and it allowed Paul Goodman to buy a farm and not have to worry about money again. Here's a poem for today by Sue Ellen Thompson, 11 Park Vista. "We rented a room from an English violinist and shared the kitchen that filled the second floor. We had until the lessons downstairs were finished to cook and eat our dinner before he started his. Married now and beginning to show, I took the train to London every day and joined the crowd perched on folding camp stools at the Tate. Returning one evening, I saw my husband wreathed in steam above the kitchen stove, while a young girl raised her violin and released a flock of sparrows in the parlor below. I paused on the front walk, breathless with greed, food, music, children, all within reach." A poem by Sue Ellen Thompson, 11 Park Vista, from her collection The Golden Hour, published by Autumn House Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse, back issues and subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. And by Lumosity, brain training with over 50 challenging games, from scientists working with university researchers to push cognitive research forward. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And welcome back to the studios here for a Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, and I'm joined in the studio by Rotary folks, both participants and folks who are in Rotary, who are all involved in the Youth Exchange Program. So with me now is Virginia Stonkus from Rotary. Also, Dan Dawson is here from Rotary. And Tamsin Peoples, who's you were involved in the Rotary Youth Exchange. Are you in Rotary now, too?
I'm in Rotaract now, which
is the
younger folks,
great,
18 to 30-year-olds. But I was a Rotary Youth Exchange student over 10 years ago now. In 2005, I was an exchange student, or a Rotary Youth Ambassador, rather, to New Zealand.
Oh, okay, cool. So you got. So we'll talk to you about that in a second. That's mm-hmm. a cool thing. And then, you are both involved in kind of administering the way. How does that happen? How are students chosen? And then how does that process work?
We both got involved in Youth Exchange through either direct contacts with people we knew or had the opportunity to observe. When I put my daughter on the plane 10 years ago and this amazing, self-confident young global citizen came home, I thought anything I could do to help
That's
kids
cool.
get involved,
yeah.
I'd be all over it. So what our role is basically to work with students between the ages of 15 up to 18. They cannot turn 18 toward the end of their year for legal reasons from our perspective. We go into the high schools and start recruiting. Our recruitment in Juneau started this past Tuesday at Thunder Mountain. We will be going into JDHS this coming Tuesday. Then we have two evening sessions, September 13th, which is Tuesday from 6 to 8 at the Mendenhall Library. And then the 14th, the next day, Wednesday, at the Juneau Downtown Library, same time, 6 to 8. That's another opportunity for parents and interested kids to come and talk with us, learn a little bit more about the program.
Cool.
Who we recruit, the qualifications are interest and willingness to reach out, to grow, to want to participate in another country. As Tamsin said, one of the unique facets of our program is you are not on just an exchange or a travel exchange. You are going out as a student ambassador, mm-hmm. representing your family, your community, your city, your country. So our recruitment starts now, as I just mentioned. It will close Friday, October 7th. Applications are due in the high school counseling offices. We will then be doing recruitment in the middle of the month. We will announce who goes by the end of the month. And then we have these students for 8 months before they go abroad. So we send them to Anchorage for a four-day training session, which is where some of our kids who have gone to will be going in January. That's where they find out which country they go to. We work with them in terms of helping them get their language skills, get their visa applications.
And how does that work? So are some of the school years set like January to January? Are the school years different depending on where the kids end up going?
Some programs like South Africa run January to January. Most don't.
So Southern Hemisphere stuff, like
right.
South America and Africa can sometimes
sure.
be that
a,
way. Yeah.
A lot of the countries will have language schools set up for the kids for inbound
mm-hmm.
For the first few weeks before
right.
they hit the school. But.
Right. And then did you get to kind of choose the place you wanted to go, or do you get a list, or how does that part of it work?
Every year the countries in which Rotary Youth Exchange, at least our district and our clubs exchange with, changes. And I was 10 years ago, and we were given the list, and we were able to rank them. But that's not how we do it anymore. Now the Rotarians and other exchange students, the Rebounds, folks that are working with these students, have the opportunity to understand the individual students' strengths, and they, through a panel, decide which country would be best suited for them or which country they could absolutely thrive in, get to their fullest achievement there possible. So our lists change every year, but with the skills that we give these Rotary Exchange students on their way out, going overseas to their host countries, they could go anywhere. I mean, the language might be the only thing they have that we'd give them a leg up beforehand, but in terms of leadership, cultural shock training, they're giving such a leg up, such a boost, that you could probably drop them off in the middle of anywhere, any country in the world, and they'd be okay.
Yeah.
They'd thrive.
Yeah. So how was it? I mean, it
was
sounds like you were
the best year of my life, hands down. It was such an amazing experience. I mean, as a newly 16-year-old, I think I was 16 years and maybe 7 or 8 days.
Yeah, were you a sophomore or a junior?
Going into my junior year.
Okay.
And getting on a plane and going off to New Zealand. The hardest thing was getting on the plane, and then the hardest part of the entire year was getting back on that plane to come home.
And then within the year you were in New Zealand, did you get to kind of see a lot of the countryside?
Oh,
country?
Definitely, and, yeah. What we did what was called the South Island Tour. I was up in Auckland, the big city in the
mm-hmm.
north, which is, New Zealand's an amazingly drastic country. If you ever watched Lord of the Rings, I mean, you know how varied the terrain is there, and to see all of it at once is amazing. We had a cultural camp for the native Maori culture there. As soon as we arrived, Marae weekend, we got to learn about the native Maori morals, language, dance, traditions, food, and that was absolutely amazing to be welcomed so wholly into that culture, not just as a Paki has, a white person, but also to be enveloped and welcomed and to be inducted into a Native Marae, a Maori Marae, upon my arrival was just fantastic.
Yeah, wow. So, and you're still a very young person, so you're not, you know, you still have lots of life to live and all that. But it,
I
you
sure
know,
hope
and,
so.
And so, so it's, I mean, so it's funny to ask a young person looking back, you know, but looking back.
It's been over 10 years.
Yeah.
And it's,
how has it affected you, do you think? I mean,
I can see the effects of being an exchange student almost every single day in my life. The position I'm working in with now, I have to do a lot of shaking hands and smiling and representing my company and representing my field as a researcher, as a scientist, going to these communities to meet people I've never met before, stepping off the plane and being able to say, hi, my name's Tamsin, I'm here on behalf of.
Mm-hmm.
That's something that I learned as a Rotary exchange student, as a Rotary Youth Ambassador, getting what we call the exchange student smile, being able to hold a smile for forever and ever because you just can't stop smiling. It's another big thing. Just the confidence to basically step off a plane, step into a room, meet new people, and present yourself is something that I can definitely see the skills I gained as a 15- and 16-year-old. Just absolutely fantastic to see them still impacting my life on a daily basis.
Yeah. Dan, what was it that drew you to getting involved in this?
Well, I was more or less recruited to the program.
Okay, you were volunteered.
Yeah, they gave me a call one day when I was out fishing and wasn't really given the opportunity to say no. But I've been involved for quite a few years in it now, and it's really rewarding. And, you know, for every student that we send out, one of the nice things about this program is we get a student back. So there's four or five Rotary students, exchange students that are in town right now going to our high schools. Then the whole community gets to enjoy these students.
Yeah, and learn from them, and that's what an exchange, of course,
right.
is all about. And that's you're right. That's something that I think that often people don't remember. That's part of what's going on. Is it's this kind of a cultural exchange between us and these different areas where all these kids are coming from as well. Yeah.
Well, and one of the other unique things about our exchange is it's basically a 3-year commitment. So as I say, this year we start our recruiting process, and we work with our students right up to the time they get on the plane to go abroad. So that's the first year. The second year is their year abroad, where they are ambassadors, as I mentioned before, of our country, of our culture, and they are learning the same. The third year is we ask them to come back and share with us what they learned, which again, going back on terms of high school. What is it about your new country that you found to be the most exciting or interesting or challenging? And tell us about that. So it's the 3 years that we really watch these young adults become amazing.
Very cool. Well, one more time, just for folks who are interested maybe in getting either their kids involved or if young people are listening right now and want to get involved, just one more time how they can do that in the next couple of little time frame here.
We'll be at JDHS on Tuesday morning, but for the 2 hours in the evening, Tuesday evening from 6 to 8 at the Menton Hall Library, and then from 6 to 8 the next night, Wednesday, at the Juneau Downtown Library, we'll have information, literature, an opportunity just to have a one-on-one, ask us whatever questions you'd like.
Short-form applications can be picked up at both counselors, high school counselor's office. They're short forms, just introductory kind of things, and then there'll be interviews after that.
Great. Well, thanks so much to all of you for coming in. Thanks for sharing your experiences as an exchange student and encouraging others to have that great positive experience that you had as well.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everyone. Here's Bird Note.
This is Bird Note. Right now, a flock of bar-headed geese could be flying over Mount Everest. These champions of high-altitude migration leave their nesting grounds in Tibet and scale the Himalayan range on their way to wintering grounds in the lowlands of India. With the help of tailwinds, they can cover the 1,000-mile trip in a single day. How do these gray-bodied, 5-pound geese with zebra-striped heads breathe at such high altitudes? Since pilots and many mountain climbers need oxygen at half that altitude. Like other birds, the geese have a unique breathing structure adapted to extract oxygen from thin air, even at 30,000 feet. After inhaled air passes through the lungs, it's temporarily stored in several sacs, then circulated back through the lungs, extracting still more oxygen. The barheaded geese also have a special type of hemoglobin, which helps their bodies absorb oxygen quickly at high altitudes. And the capillaries in their breast muscles are more numerous than in other birds, providing the muscles with a greater supply of oxygen. Scientists are studying the physiology of these high-flying barheaded geese to look for ways to help people cope with altitude and respiratory diseases. There's always more to the story at birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
Ah, the happy sounds of marimba. You can't.
Yes.
You can't be sad and listen to marimba.
They also marimbas always sound sunny.
Yes, it does always, even if it's not
even
so sunny outside.
Yes.
I'm here with Betsy Sims and Jesse Larson, and they're going to be part of the community marimba workshop. When's that happening?
It's happening this Sunday.
Okay.
There's one workshop from noon to two for families, which could be. Kids or parents or grandparents or cousins or uncles, whatever you got.
Just anyone in the family.
Pets. No, not pets. And then there's from 3:30 to 5:30, there's one for teens and adults.
Okay, very cool. So tell me, how did you get involved in marimba, Jesse?
Well, I have been playing for about 11 years. So I started when I was just 11 years old. So I've been playing for half my life.
She was a wee one.
Wow.
Yeah. And I am from Colorado, so I started playing there kind of at like an after-school program, sort of like what we do here. But then I just continued to play for a while. And
very cool.
Yeah.
Now, when we say marimba band, so what are the different instruments that are in marimba?
It's
xylophones,
pretty much,
right?
Well, so a marimba is pretty much like a xylophone.
Okay.
So a marimba band is just like a bunch of marimbas.
Okay.
So with Zimbabwean marimbas, we have typically seven in a band, and there is a bass, which is like the big one, and the baritone, tenors, and sopranos. So we just have the mix of those, and then
okay.
we just play them all together.
And that's the traditional thing, is to not, there's not other percussion instruments, there's not other things that, or...
Well, sometimes there's a traditional instrument called hosho, which are like shakers.
Okay.
Kind of like the drum kit.
Yeah,
version.
Right.
And a lot of people play with drums. Clay Good plays with us on drums sometimes.
Yeah, okay.
It so
makes
there's
sense.
Lots you
I can see
yeah.
where that makes so much sense. It's
yeah.
a percussive thing happening.
Yeah.
But what is it that appeals so much to you about, how did it, why was it, why did marimba be, the, why would that become the thing that just you ended up just identifying
yeah.
with?
Well, for me, my family always really wanted me to play piano when
okay.
I was growing up because I was pretty musical, but I didn't really like piano, mostly because I had to read music, and I didn't get that. I wasn't very excited about piano music, so I kind of half-heartedly did that for a long time and never really learned how to read music. But with Zimbabwean marimba, you don't actually know how to read. You don't have to know how to read music, so I really liked that part of it. You just go and learn everything by ear. So that's what we do, is we teach everybody every single part, and then they memorize it, and then they just repeat it over and over again.
Cool.
And that's how it all fits together. You put a bunch of parts together, and it's all these syncopated parts, and they fit together in really cool ways. And it's just kind of it's funkier music.
I was going to say that when I've watched you guys play, it's half dance and half playing the instrument, right? I mean,
yeah.
you know, like everyone's moving.
Yeah. If you're doing it right, yeah.
right? you
yes.
know, it's not like you're just sitting there very quietly and playing them. You know, like it's real movement. There's sweat
yeah.
involved, right? It's really
exactly.
jumping around,
exactly.
And especially like you know those real dramatic moments when you all hit on one note and that kind of stuff. You know, like there's real jumping up and down going on. You know, it's exciting.
I like to call it marimba size,
yes.
especially when you're playing the big instruments.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's really
anybody
to carry
who's
a lot of
them,
range.
Oh, yeah.
yeah.
You're
yeah.
moving around and it's your afterwards you're sweaty and wonderful. It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's great
I know,
and fun.
It's really it's something that's just absolutely energizing to you,
the
I know.
The players
you know.
And the
yeah.
audience, and that's part of why we're doing this is cuz people love watching the marimbas. And we do classes, but they're usually a month or 2 months and
sure.
a lot of people can't do that. Which is why we decided to just put these couple workshops in where 2 hours you'll learn a whole song.
Yes,
and get
a fairly simple one,
yeah.
obviously.
Yeah,
but then at the end of it, you've really learned something.
Yeah.
You can play. Yeah,
yeah, we'll be able to play an entire song by the end of 2 hours.
Very cool.
Which is pretty fun.
And the other sweet thing with marimbas is you can put, for a number of songs, you can have people who've never played before playing with pretty experienced players. You can just alter the difficulty of the parts. And it's unusual because most other musical things, you kind of have to have people of similar skills.
Sure, right, yeah.
But marimbas are kind of magical that way.
Yeah, you can just, you can cover for other people's sort of stuff and what they're doing. Yeah,
yep.
right. Very cool. All right, well, when is it happening one more time?
It's happening this coming Sunday. One class is at noon. One is at 3:30. You can contact me. Should I give them my number?
Keep going.
My number is 209-3202. If you give me a call, you need to reserve a space so we make sure we have enough room for everyone. But give me a call, 209-3202, 2 o'clock, or I mean 12 to 2 on Sunday, September 11th, and 3:30 to 5:30.
Marimba sizing is going to be happening, right?
You got to be prepared to have a lot of fun.
A lot of fun is going to be had, so that is just something that, exactly, don't come and not expect to have fun.
Exactly. You can't be pouting through this. You won't be able to keep it up. It'll end.
But you won't be bummed out about the rain either.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I know. Oh, boy.
Out the window.
All right. It's Marimba Community of Marimba Workshop. It's happening Sunday. And Jesse Larson and Betsy Sims, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us about it.
Thank you, Andy.
Cool. And that's it for a Juno Afternoon for today. Thanks, everyone. Have a great weekend.
U.S. and Russia try to work out a deal to help the millions of people suffering in Syria. A round of talks in Geneva is aimed at trying to organize a ceasefire that will hold long enough to get more humanitarian aid into Aleppo. For Friday, September 9th, it's All Things Considered. I'm Audie Cornish. More on those negotiations over Syria in this hour. Later, House lawmakers pass a bill allowing families of the victims of the 9/11 attacks to sue Saudi Arabia.
We want to make sure that there are no more 9/11s. This is one more step we can take to show foreign governments they cannot step aside.
And we'll visit the only memorial for those who died of illnesses tied to the work at Ground Zero.
When you look at this wall and you look at the, unfortunately, the ever-growing number of names, you realize how much you're not alone.
And kids in the Bay Area react to Colin Kaepernick. First News.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. After lengthy talks in Geneva, the U.S. and Russia have announced a deal to work together in Syria on a ceasefire. NPR's Alice Fordham reports if the ceasefire holds and other conditions are met, the U.S. and Russia then plan to work together in Syria to combat ISIS and the Al-Qaeda affiliate.
Secretary of State John Kerry and Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov say implementation would begin on September 12th with a cessation of hostilities between the regime and the opposition. Under the deal, the Syrian Air Force will not fly combat missions in areas where the opposition is present, areas which will be designated by the US and Russia, and both regime and opposition must allow access for aid. Lavrov said that if the truce and aid access holds for 7 days, the U.S. and Russia will create a joint information center to coordinate airstrikes on ISIS and the Syrian Al-Qaeda affiliate. Alice Fordham, NPR News, Beirut.
Hillary Clinton and her Republican rival Donald Trump have been sparring over North Korea's latest nuclear test. Following a meeting with security experts,